If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
There is 1 week left of the Missouri 2023 legislative session. While lawmakers met their constitutional deadline to pass a budget for the upcoming fiscal year, there are a number of legislative priorities for Republicans that have not yet made the finish line. On this week's episode of Politically Speaking, Senator Lauren Arthur joins the show to talk about this year's session, including her opinions on the final week. Some of the topics the Kansas City Democrat spoke on included what she believes are wins and losses in the budget, her thoughts on a school open enrollment bill, and why she thinks bills seeking to widen access to childcare have met some Republican resistance. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
My promise to St. Louis was that I would do the absolute most for each and every person, starting with those who have the very least.
What I wanted to do was look and see what other states are doing.
We have to be willing to change those laws, that they are balanced and they affect everybody equally.
As somebody that grew up in the St. Louis area, in North St. Louis County, I didn't know any lawyers growing up.
We got to find long-term solutions to make government better, but also to be able to provide services to people.
I don't want to leave that federal money that we've been leaving all these years on the table.
We need to be spending this money to take care of Missourians.
I thought we accomplished a lot this year, but a lot more needs to be done.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, State House and politics reporter Sarah Kellogg. Joining me is my co-host in St. Louis. He is the political correspondent for St. Louis Public Radio,
Jason Rosenbaum.
And sitting across from me today, she is the senator for District 17, which includes part of Kansas City.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Name, please?
Lauren Arthur.
Thank you so much. I know we're on a Friday, but let's get right into it. I just, for our listeners, if you just want to do a quick reminder of what your district is, who you represent, and kind of what does it look like after redistricting?
Sure. Well, first, let me say thank you for your flexibility. We have rescheduled several times this week.
Worth getting, for sure.
I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad we pushed it a little later, because had I done this yesterday, all of my hot takes would have been wrong.
That's fair enough.
I am Lauren Arthur. I represent District 17 in Clay County, Missouri. I'm very lucky that I grew up there and have very deep roots in the area, but it's a wonderful place to live, work, and play. The district is mostly suburban and includes Kansas City and parts of are Kansas City North and North Kansas City, so that's not at all confusing. But great community, great families there, great schools, great neighborhoods, and it's been my honor to represent that area.
So we are recording this on the second to last Friday of session. In general, how do you feel like session's gone this year?
Every session is its own animal, and it's hard to predict how it's going to turn out. I will say that the floor leader has done a nice job of managing session. A lot of the more controversial issues have had time to get worked out behind the scenes, and so there hasn't been as many late nights. I think there are still some divides among particularly Republican members of the Senate, and some of that tension has risen to the surface, especially recently. It's hard to predict whether we'll end this session with a bang or a whimper, but so far, things have been a lot less contentious than we saw last year.
Yeah, last year, it seems like the redistricting map took over everything. And so, yeah, compared to last year, I feel like the Senate is moving on more bills, more or less.
Yes. And it's my favorite thing to go into a room and say, I hear we're going to the maps today, and just see the panic come across people's faces as a flashback to last session. But, we have dealt with very partisan issues and Republican priorities earlier in the session. But I think there have also been examples of a lot of bipartisan work and trying to get common sense things done.
Do you feel like, you know, getting things through the Senate seems like that's a little bit easier this year? Seems like there's a little bit more trouble getting things through the other chamber. Do you feel like there's been kind of a breakdown of communications between the House and Senate this year?
Every year we see that, and it feels new every year. It's frustrating every year, but the reality is it's not uncommon to see that, particularly towards the end of session when everyone's priorities, you know, my priority is the most important thing that the legislature can pass. Everyone feels that way. But I get the sense that House leadership, maybe they're not always on the same page. And I do think that there has been some frustration and communication breakdown between House leadership and Senate leadership. And mostly it's because they all have different priorities.
Do you feel like this aids Democrats in the fact that maybe there's a little bit of not as much getting done?
I ain't mad. I ain't mad. Better they're fighting than they're fighting us.
So we're recording this 2 days after the House and Senate met through a series of conference committees to determine the operating budget. What are your thoughts on this budget?
I'm really proud to support this budget. And I, in my 9 years in the legislature, I have not always said that. I feel like we are making historic investments in education and infrastructure, in mental health and social services. And it's been really a privilege to work on the budget. I feel like we also have done a good job of seeing, you know, our community's needs be met through some financial resources. Not every problem can be solved with money, but there are a lot of problems that are money problems. And that includes things like, you know, retaining and recruiting teachers in classrooms, or ensuring that people with disabilities have service providers that are able to come to them. So we met a lot of those needs, and I'm glad that it's a budget that also reflects the governor's priorities, which I never thought I'd say. But, you know, I'm really happy with what he laid out at the beginning of the legislative session, and there was broad agreement. I will also mention, though, that without Democrats' help, I don't think any of those budget bills would have passed.
Yeah, you actually transitioned into my question very nicely. It seems that like every year the House does something that in the budget that gets a lot of attention. Like I was on, this is going to be a humble brag, and I honestly don't care. I'm exhausted. I was on MSNBC and they asked me about the whole library funding.
Yes.
And in the back of my mind, I was like, yeah, I understand why this is getting a lot of attention nationally, but this is never going to make it through the process. Because the House Democrats and the Senate Democrats team up with the Senate Republicans and they have numbers. Mm-hmm. Isn't that just basic? Isn't it as easy as that? Like, as long as that dynamic is at play, House Republicans are going to lose every time on the budget.
And unless they figure out another way, that is going to happen. And I'm happy to see that happen, because defunding public libraries is stupid. Trying to insert language that would jeopardize billions of dollars is stupid. And I'm grateful that there are still enough people, Republicans and Democrats, that are willing to reject those really extreme proposals. But at the end of the day, don't mess with libraries, because I got more emails on that topic than I think any other this session.
Kind of, you know, it seems like it was more of a legislative statement of a displeasure over that lawsuit. You know, another kind of thing that was legislating through the budget, as many said, was the anti-DEI language, you know, stopping the state from expenditures on diversity, equity, inclusion. Initially, it was with other businesses and vendors, which many people said would just freeze the state from being able to do business with anyone. And then it was shrunk in the Senate side to just intergovernmental. Is this something you're going to maybe keep an eye out for and maybe in a new renewed effort, either through the budget next year or even statutorily?
Absolutely. I don't know that those efforts to do something around anti-DEI language are over this year. So I think we are really aware that's still out there. It's amazing to me that I'm agreeing with the Missouri Chamber when they called it the most dangerous job-killing legislation that's been proposed. I remember talking at a civic council event in Kansas City at the beginning of session, and someone asked a question about this. And in the back of my mind, this is what I said. I said, you know, it seems like that's very unlikely. I haven't heard a lot of interest on that topic, especially from leadership. But these really fringe extreme ideas have a way of taking hold, and then that becomes the priority the next legislative session. And I feel like this is another example where there is a kind of weird dark web idea that starts to infect the General Assembly. And then, you know, for no reason at all, we're debating whether or not to include language, even though there is broad understanding that it would jeopardize billions of dollars. And not to mention that departments think that the DEI programs have been helpful in trying to retain staff. I don't really know what it is that the Republicans are trying to fight, and because they can't clearly articulate it. It's just sort of a alphabet soup, whatever the acronym war is of the week. And, you know, it's not serious lawmaking.
You know, to go back to the budget negotiations, it seems like a lot of those negotiations were done before the committees met. I was just trying to keep up. I'm like, y'all were just going and not, you know, a lot of discussion. So it seems like a lot of it was agreed upon before you all met for committee for markup. What did you think about that approach? Were you a fan of it, or did you kind of wish there was maybe more of an open dialogue?
I found it helpful in that we are up against a time crunch. And so that was one of the more efficiently run conference committee or budget conference committee experiences I've had during my tenure. And I'm really grateful because I feel like our Senate Appropriations Chair fought for our Senate priorities. I admit that it's not everything that I would have wanted. I was a little disappointed in particular about the DD provider rates. So right now, people who are direct service providers to people with disabilities, they're among the worst paid professions in the state. And it's really hard work. You can go work at a fast food restaurant and have less stress in your life. But these are people, these are caregivers who devote their lives to other people and people with a lot of physical and emotional and mental demands. And so they're currently paid at something or reimbursed at, I think, $15 an hour. We increased that funding to get everyone up to $17 as the Senate position. And then there was an ultimate compromise position of $16 an hour, which is progress, but it's just not nearly enough. And so I was a little disappointed in that.
Do you feel like that was kind of the one area? I feel like the Senate got a lot of their priorities. Is that one mm-hmm. where you really just feel like you lost?
Yes, I was disappointed. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was an increase. For years, I saw cuts to that department. And so you can't look a gift horse in the mouth, but it's still you feel disappointed, especially when we're still sitting on a budget surplus.
Now, let's talk about the I-70 funding. It's bigger than what Parson wanted, because if I'm not mistaken, it's going to be the entirety of I-70. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, though, that the biggest criticism of this has not been from like the right, but it's mainly been from the left, mm-hmm. who see like expansion of highways as a huge waste of money. And they'd rather see it on things like public transportation or incentives for people to bike or things like that. I know that's not a very popular argument within the Missouri Capitol that's like teeming with Republicans, but do you think that this is a worthwhile investment that is going to help the state in the long run compared to those other things I just mentioned?
I remember an official describing to me what's happening with I-70, and they said literally I-70 is rotting from underneath. It's maintained. They do their best, but it has been neglected for decades. And as a result, it has become a public safety issue. This is a once in a generation lifetime or once in a generation opportunity to make improvements to what is a really important part of Missouri infrastructure, and for myriad reasons, including for economic development reasons. So given the political reality of where I work, I think you can do both. And we have tried to advocate for more funding for public transit. But at the end of the day, I do think it's the right decision at the right time. And my hope is that instead of just kicking the can down the road and hoping some future legislator decides to act, that we have an opportunity to do it now. And I think it makes sense.
To go into education funding, I know kind of the one of the Senate contributions was $7.5 million to have the state fully fund that 38, you know, thousand base pay for teachers. Thoughts on that? And was that another area where maybe you're hoping a little bit more money for teachers in the budget?
Well, I was really glad to see that we increased that amount so that there wouldn't be a requirement for matching, because I think there were still several school districts who felt like they couldn't afford $38,000 as a starting baseline salary. I think that there is a lot more that the legislature can do to try and recruit and retain staff. And there were a number of programs that sort of didn't get as much attention, things like Grow Your Own, which encouraged young people to consider going into the teaching profession. And those programs have had a lot of success across the state. We also have funding for the Career Ladders Program, which allows for a sort of pay increase or stipend-like program for teachers who I mean, to be fair, they have to increase their responsibility, but they do get compensated for it. So I think that's one of the most important areas where we can invest. It's always tricky. You know, do you increase funding through the foundation formula? And I'm sponsoring a bill that would do that. I'm still hopeful that that bill may, you know, make it across the finish line in some form. But that's an important change that we can make to increase funding long term.
We need to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.
And we're back on Politically Speaking. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio's Sarah Kellogg. My co-host is Jason Rosenbaum, the political correspondent for St. Louis Public Radio. And sitting across from me on the second to last Friday of the Missouri legislative session is Senator Lauren Arthur. She is a senator from District 17, which is a part of Clay County on the west side of the state. We got more questions for you. Let's get right back into it. I think the next area is, which you mentioned a little bit before break, childcare. Can you explain the various approaches to childcare that the legislature has attempted this year and kind of what these bills do?
Sure. So one of the major changes was the increased funding for the childcare subsidy rate. So that's for low-income families. They direct that funding, that subsidy, to childcare providers. Right now, Missouri reimburses at about 28% of the 100% rate. And a lot of providers think that that's not even worth their time because it's such a low reimbursement rate. So our funding in the budget now increases that to, I believe, 58%, with an intent to hopefully increase eventually to 100%, which is great. I am the sponsor of 3 child care tax credit programs. These are part of the governor's platform, and they get at creating incentives around child care in different ways. Some are tax credits for businesses that maybe want to offer child care as a benefit to their employees. There's assistance for child care providers themselves and a way of trying to increase employee wages. And then there are tax credits for anyone, community members who want to help out their local child care facility, and they would see a credit from that.
So these bills, I know you brought them to the Senate floor. It was a bit of contention between you and Senator Igel. I won't play the clip, but thoughts on kind of why do you feel like there's kind of been this resistance to what you're trying to do here?
This may sound severe and cynical, but I think some of my colleagues don't care about kids. Honestly, I think, you know, they just don't see the need to address children's issues. And, you know, they think that families, they think that anything other than a government entity should be responsible for solving the problem. And I wish that were the case. You know, it's not something that can be fixed without the aid of government involvement in some way. You know, I just think that children, poor people, folks with disabilities, unfortunately, those groups don't rise to the attention of some of my colleagues. And so they would just rather not help.
Let's move on to education. I know you're on that committee. We'll do a couple. You know, I guess the kind of big one that passed out first was the Parents' Bill of Rights. I know that stripped out of the budget was funding for that transparency portal. Does that show not a good sign for that bill passing this year?
It's met a lot of opposition in the House, and some Republican House members feel like the bill goes too far, and some feel like it doesn't go far enough. And so they've made changes. We sort of staked a position that, like, this is about as much as the Senate can bear. And if they try to make changes that worsen the bill, in at least the Democrats' estimation, then that bill can't pass again.
Another bill kind of not quite heard in the Senate yet is open enrollment. Thoughts on that bill in general?
I will admit that it's the best version of an open enrollment bill that I've read. But I still think it's really disruptive for our schools and destabilizing after we've had years and now years of a pandemic that has also been destabilizing. We have charters, there are now vouchers or ESAs, and to add one more school choice option into the mix, I do think that all of it sort of stresses school districts, and that instead we should focus our efforts on strengthening public schools through funding, through different kinds of legislative ideas to help teachers feel supported. And I think all of this sort of adds to the weight of public schools feeling like they're under attack.
I think it's fair to say that that open enrollment bill has no chance of passing before the end of session. Yes or no answer on that first?
Nothing is ever dead until the after the last day. So,
yeah, the reason I asked that, do you think that there could be a bigger push to pass that next year?
I think you'll see a push next week on open enrollment, and I'm very interested to see if they can find the right balance. At this point, it looks like it's facing a ton of hurdles, but the substitute I've seen includes a lot of things that a lot of senators want, so you never know.
Well, you know, this was one of the closest votes this session in the House. So why do you think this is something that just, or even Republicans really can't just get behind, you know, and vote?
Well, I think we're all hearing from our school districts that this is not going to be helpful. And I also think that Republicans are not unified on the issue of education, and not even unified on the issue of choice. So there are some senators who would rather see a push towards ESAs. There are others who like open enrollment. And there are some that want open enrollment with charters. Like, there are so many variables that add complexity to the issue that if you appease one person, you're going to end up making someone else mad.
So one of the things that is left unpassed thus far as we're recording is legislation that would bar gender-affirming care for minors. Senate Democrats managed to extract some concessions, including exempting transgender youth who are taking puberty blockers and hormone therapy. The House, and also there's a four-year sunset, the House doesn't want those things. What's going to happen here? Because Governor Parson has said he will call the legislature into special session if this bill doesn't pass. Like, what do you think happens next? What do you think happens in the last week of session on this?
My guess is that the Senate position will prevail and that the House will take up the Senate bill probably towards the end of the session or at the end of the week. I don't know that. That's my hope. I feel like we've already devoted too much time to this issue, and it's been at great cost to Missouri families and particularly transgender youth. So I don't want to see another moment spent on this topic. I don't want to see money wasted to devote legislative time to attacking Missourians. And I do think that there's been a push to try and just pass the Senate bill and move on.
So one of the things that's alarmed a lot of LGBTQ activists is Attorney General Andrew Bailey's emergency rules, which not only affect transgender youth, but also transgender adults. And those may not stand up to judicial scrutiny. I think the reason they're alarmed is they think that the next wave of transgender legislation is going to be restrictions against gender-affirming care for adults. Mm-hmm. Like, and even though Republicans say they don't want to do that, including Secretary of State Jay Ashcroft, their calculation is if Fox News or some other conservative media outlet transmits a lot of anti-adult trans coverage, it's going to gin up voters to demand that sort of thing. What's kind of your thoughts about that?
It's strange to me because Republicans used to hold the mantle of being the party of individual rights and freedom. And I just feel like they've moved so far away from that. It's at the cost and expense of Missourians. It feels like Andrew Bailey is trying to grasp at straws to put a campaign together. And if, you know, now he's lost his ability to attack Kim Gardner. And so he's looking for any sort of thing that will get him a headline.
You know, when other bills heard this year included basically Missouri's version of a don't say gay law, anti-drag bills were heard in committee. None of them made it past committee. They were voted out of committee, but they never made it on the floor. I know Senate President Pro Tem Caleb Brown, once asked about the drag bill, said you have other things to worry about. But kind of thoughts on these bills, and is that just something that you're just going to be on alert for next year?
I'm sure we'll see those bills filed again next year. I'm sure there will be an attempt to force debate on the topic, but I just don't see there being a real need or desire to go down that road.
Well, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much, Representative Arthur, for joining us on the show. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is a part of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. You can follow all of our coverage at stlpr.org. Senator Arthur, this was so much fun. Where can people find you on the internet where you want to be found? That's okay. Twitter's dying. I mean, do you really need to promote it anymore?
I have spent significantly less time and my quality of life has improved.
Well, as you know, NPR is a rogue entity now on Twitter.
That's right. I am at Lauren Arthur Mo, and I'm on the Facebook under probably a similar name.
All right. Until next time. So long.